the combined thrill, euphoria, pressure, stress of leading about 10,000 troops in combat, that triggered my genetic predisposition for bipolar disorder. And I shot into mania, felt like Superman, fearless, bulletproof, all over the battlefield, solving problems before anybody else knew there was a problem, under fire, life and death decisions. The combination of all those elements shot me into mania.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, focus, and consistency in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harshaw Jr., and today I bring you retired two-star general, Greg Martin. Greg Martin is a retired two-star general. He's a PhD. He is a 36-year Army combat veteran. He had an amazing career. He was the commander of an engineer company, battalion, and the 130th Engineer Brigade in combat. He held prestigious roles, like he was the president of the National Defense University. He was the commander of Fort Wood. He was the commandant of the Army War College. I mean, this guy is elite. And you're about to hear an absolutely fascinating interview with a guy who is successful by any stretch. I mean, elite level success, but man, he shares his vulnerabilities by dealing with bipolar disorder. And interestingly, you're going to hear him talk about how this was almost his, it was his unfair advantage. He didn't know it at the time. He didn't know he had bipolar, but it was his unfair advantage and it helped him reach these unprecedented heights. And then it was also the cause of his demise. So he shares the ups and downs of this. Fascinating for you and I to hear this. Also educational for us to understand if we have a loved one or even yourself dealing with some of these or seeing some of these symptoms in yourself or symptoms in your colleagues or family members, how do you approach them? How do you deal with this? This is a really powerful conversation you're about to hear with a retired, like I said, two-star general. I've never had somebody of his stature on before. So super excited to bring you Greg Martin. You were the commandant of the Army War College. You were the commander of Fort Wood. You're a qualified Army, was airborne ranger engineer. You had quite the career.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. You know, I started off at West Point, my Army career, and did extremely well there, then went to Army Ranger School, and then excelled through all the ranks from platoon leader in charge of about 30 soldiers, all the way to Fort Leonard Wood, about 30,000, and had really great success. Unbeknown to me, I was living with a bipolar brain and on the bipolar spectrum. And the paradox is that my bipolar condition actually helped me enormously to achieve what I did. And it was only when the condition went too high that I came crashing down.
Tell me about that. So you excelled through the ranks so successfully with a bipolar brain. What are the habits and sort of routines and sort of things that got you there? And you're saying both bipolar is sort of a characteristic or something that you had that helped you. How is that possible?
So the basic talent and work habits were fundamental. So, I mean, up early, work hard, do your homework, be prepared, take care of your soldiers, do whatever it takes to get the mission done while caring for the people, you know, all that kind of stuff. Being a good athlete, being smart, being a good leader, all that stuff is just basic, foundational, fundamental qualities of being a good Army officer. But where the bipolar condition really helped me is the tenets of bipolar disorder are that the brain on its own decides it wants to produce and distribute excess amounts of powerful chemicals like dopamine, endorphins, and others. It does it on its own. I mean, that's the nature of the disease. The brain is ill. It does its own thing. But in doing its own thing, it gave me tremendous amounts of energy, drive, enthusiasm, problem-solving skills, creativity, positivity, extroversion, and the like, that then elevated and boosted all the basic talent and ability that I had and helped me to do much, much better.
None of those characteristics I would associate with mental illness, but that's what you had.
Yes, They absolutely are, in fact, a part of bipolar disorder. They're a fundamental part. And I learned just a couple of years ago that I had a condition called hyperthymia, which is a near continuous level of low-grade mania. And remember, mania is what gives you all that extra energy in the upside of the condition. And I lived with that my whole life and got a biochemical advantage that helped carry me and elevate me. So it's very paradoxical, but it's totally true.
So when I come across people with all of those characteristics that you mentioned earlier, driven and high energy and drive and achievement and all that, I would never think, you know, mental health, I would never think mental illness, but I guess it can be disguised, or that can be, can't judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely. You're totally correct. Those traits are very desirable. They're things that all walks of life prize, not just the military, but the business world, the athletic world, entertainment, arts. They all prize that. And because a person has those characteristics, it does not mean they have bipolar disorder. But it does mean they could very well have bipolar disorder, and it is being disguised. And the thing that disguises it, which happened to me totally, is my success. So if you are very successful, and what happens is the people around you, unless they're really trained on the characteristics and the symptoms of bipolar disorder, they're not going to recognize it because you're doing so well. And then if you do go in and get mental health help with a doctor, they are probably not going to recognize it because all they're going to see is success, this high-ranking person. And so it's very easy for them to misdiagnose it. And it wasn't for me until the condition got completely out of control, where I went into a state of madness and insanity, that then it became easily recognizable. And even then, the doctors misdiagnosed me 3 times and said, "You're fine." But I wasn't fine. I had raging bipolar disorder that had turned into a bonfire-like effect.
So what happens in your brain that takes you from a disease that you don't know you have, it's manifesting in ways that are helping you be successful, to the other side of the line? Like, what is happening in your brain that causes that? Do you know?
So inside the brain, and I've got sort of, since I'm not a scientist or a doctor or a psychiatrist, my knowledge of the inner working of the cells and the wiring of the brain, you know, I'm not an expert on that. But in sort of layman's terms, the brain, with its bipolar journey, moving up the bipolar spectrum, the swings into mania begin to get higher and higher. The plunges into depression start getting lower and lower. And so the oscillations start getting higher and higher. It begins to whipsaw more and more rapidly. And what's happening inside the brain, the wiring in the cells, is the brain, again, on its own, has decided, I'm going to create and produce ever more of these endorphins and dopamine and other things, which then drives the brain higher into mania. Higher and higher. But what goes up must come down. And so at a certain point, the brain decides, okay, I've been high long enough, time to go down. And on its own, because it's sick, it's diseased, it starts to underproduce and underdistribute these same chemicals and powerful elements that then plunge the person into depression. And so it's the brain working internally to create too much and then too little of these chemicals.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now back to the show. So what happened in your first episode when you said you were misdiagnosed? Take us back to that moment. What was going on? What happened? What triggered you to think, I need help? What was going on then?
So again, I was on the bipolar spectrum my whole life, unknown. It helped me. And then in the Iraq War, 2003, I was 47. The combined thrill, euphoria, pressure, stress of leading about 10,000 troops in combat, That triggered my genetic predisposition for bipolar disorder, and I shot into mania, felt like Superman, fearless, bulletproof, all over the battlefield, solving problems before anybody else knew there was a problem, under fire, life and death decisions. The combination of all those elements shot me into mania. Well, it was unknown, undetected, undiagnosed for the next 12 years as it went higher and higher. During that time, I felt great because I was manic about 90% of the time. So I felt wonderful, nothing wrong with me. And I excelled and I got promoted 3 times. But when I did dip into depression, 3 different occasions, I went to the doctor and said, "Hey, doctor, there's something wrong with me. I have depression. I've never had it before. And I'm normally really up." And these 3 times they said, "You're fine. There's nothing wrong." And then eventually the depression lifted naturally and I went back into a manic state. But then when I went into full-blown mania in 2014, age 58, essentially in a state of madness, over the top, out of control, people started reporting my behavior to my boss, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he knew me and we got along great, but he said, "Hey, something's wrong." And he did a series of assessments and I got a call on a Friday and it said, "Greg, I need you to report to my office." And I thought in my manic state, I was going to get promoted. Instead, I got fired. And he said, "I love you like a brother. You've done an unbelievable job. I give you a grade of A+, but your time at National Defense University, where I was president, is over. You have until 5 p.m. today to resign or I'll fire you. And I'm ordering you to get a psychiatric evaluation this week at Walter Reed." So I did. I went in 3 times that month and got psych evals.
Do you mind if I ask what kind of behavior triggered this? Because you're obviously a high performer, great record, great track record. What led to this?
So my energy levels went through the roof. I mean, it wasn't just high energy. It was ultra high energy that was bizarre. I talked for longer and longer periods of time, sometimes hours without stopping. Meetings ran, you know, 1 hour meeting might run for 2-3 hours until people started getting up and leaving because they couldn't take it anymore. I started walking around the campus, going into classrooms and auditoriums and just taking over and just lecturing and pontificating with my grandiose ideas for world peace, which I believed I held the key to world peace, and I was the smartest person in the world. I had religiosity to an extreme level, to where I talked about God and my role as an apostle to transform the Department of Defense nonstop. And I talked about it openly in the workplace, which is really inappropriate in a government setting to talk about your beliefs of religion. I was doing about 30 significant religious events a week across 4 different churches, saw demons, saw the Holy Spirit come down, would go bike riding late at night and hallucinate that I was up flying above the monuments in Washington, D.C. I had flashbacks to Iraq where, you know, explosions, bombs going off, dead bodies, where the people in the room that were opposing my transformation of the university, they morphed into guerrilla terrorist fighters in Iraq who I thought were trying to kill me. And I'm really fortunate I didn't, you know, hit them with a chair or throw them out the window or do something, you know, really, really bad. You know, so I came to work a lot without wearing gym clothes. Like the uniform at the university was Class A uniform. And I would come in gym clothes. And when people would challenge me, I'd say, "Hey, I get paid to think and I think better with gym clothes on."
Yeah. Wow. Now, does the Greg that I'm sitting here looking at, talking to right now, believe any of those things? Or is that just a completely alternate, you know, alter ego?
It was totally true and real as it happened, the hallucinations and the delusions, completely real. Now, after the fact, having gotten, you know, years of treatment, I now realize they were hallucinations and delusions, and they were not real. They were in my mind. They might have been real in my mind at the time, but they're not objectively real.
Okay, so you have a conversation with your boss, who's the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he basically fires you and orders you to get an evaluation at Walter Reed. What next?
Yes. So he was the highest ranking military officer in the country that I worked for. And the school that I ran, the National Defense University, was the highest level school in for strategic thinking and strategic planning in the country. He really did me a favor, though. He probably saved me from a stroke, a potential heart attack, possibly losing my marriage, because I was so completely out of control. It was a good thing to get out of the pressure cooker and into a different lane. So I went to Walter Reed three times that month and got evaluated by different doctors. And all three, they misread it and they said, "You're fine. There's nothing wrong with you. You're fit for duty." And again, the reason is, first off, they didn't get hardly any collateral information, meaning talking to my wife, my family members, work colleagues, etc. So they didn't get a complete picture. And that's not uncommon in the psychiatric world because they're so busy and they don't have that much time with each patient. The other thing is they saw, hey, here's a 58-year-old guy, two-star general, extremely successful, you know, and they just thought, I mean, they couldn't see past the success to see that inside of my head, I had a very sick, diseased brain with bipolar disorder. They couldn't see it. And so then over the next 4 months, I spiraled and then crashed into terrible, hopeless, crippling depression, along with ever worsening, terrifying psychosis of my own death. And finally, in November, 4 months after getting fired, I kind of clawed my way back into the doctor and said, "Hey, doc, there is really something wrong with me. I can't function as a person. I can't make a decision as to what pair of socks to put on. I'm a complete zombie. I need help." And they were able to take a piece of collateral information that my wife provided, which was, "I think he is manic." And they were able to take that and combine it with the fact that I was obviously very depressed and then connect the dots and say, "Aha, bipolar disorder, type 1 with psychosis." And they got the diagnosis correct. Unfortunately, I went from bad to worse over the next 2 years. It was very difficult for them to get the right medications. And so I went from bad to worse. My condition just was appalling. I barely was functioning as a human being and finally got inpatient care at a VA up in New England where we were living.
So, Greg, was that the end of your military career?
Pretty much, yes. When I got, you know, removed from command, forced to resign, fired, whatever you want to call it, I was also forced to retire early. I wasn't retired right away, but I was given several months and then retired. So that came sooner than expected. And then I was diagnosed in November and I was retired in May. That was the end of my military career.
What advice do you have somebody else who might either feel like they may be experiencing some of this themselves, or maybe they have a colleague or somebody that they work with who may have bipolar or some kind of mental illness? I mean, you know, you, by all accounts, were successful operating at a high level. There's no signs of this. There are signs, but just unrecognizable signs to the untrained eye.
Yeah, the signs were there in retrospect. So if you go back and look at my life and my work performance and everything, although I was performing at a very high level, there were indicators and signs that were there that nobody picked up until I went completely out of control, and then everybody picked it up. So it was like a switch from nobody noticed to suddenly everybody noticed because things accelerated into full-blown mania. What I would say is that as far as bipolar disorder, when you're in a state of mania, you feel so great and so smart and you're performing so high and you feel like Superman, you're not going to recognize there's anything wrong unless you have a terrible incident like beating somebody up, getting in a terrible car crash, getting in an altercation with the police, getting arrested, spending all your money, doing things that are really, really over the top. Then people will recognize mania. I was fortunate that nothing that bad ever happened to me. When you're in depression, though, you feel terrible. It's just the opposite. That's when you recognize that there's something wrong. So what I would say is if a person thinks that there's indicators, they should go in and get help. And they should talk to people they trust and who care about them, you know, spouse, family, close friends, close work colleagues, and have a conversation and go get help. Now, if you are a family member and you notice someone else who's having problems, you should first off know what the symptoms of the most frequent mental illnesses are. Be able to recognize what is mania, what does it look like, what does depression look like, and then have a conversation, kind of a friendly, gentle, helpful conversation, and say, hey, Joe, hey, Mary, I really care about you, and here are some of the signs I'm seeing that concern me. How about we go visit a mental health professional, and I'll go with you, and I'll be in the meeting with you to give you support. That's really important. The thing about these mental illnesses is that if you don't get help, you face a path of destruction. You'll probably lose your marriage, your family, your career. Good chance you'll become homeless, become addicted, end up in jail, end up dead. So suicide rates for people with bipolar disorder are 40 times higher than the average population. So you're really playing with fire with mental illness. And so you really need to get help. And if you do get help, just the opposite path opens up, because with the medical professionals can do a good job of managing through medication, therapy, and other, you know, healthful living, there's a really good chance you can live a happy, healthful, purposeful life and really just have a great life after. So the choice is really the person's.
Yeah. Like now, when you were in one of those extreme states where, you know, you had these grand delusions and you were having hallucinations, if somebody said to you, Greg, let's go to a mental health professional, you need help, do you think that you would have said, sure, let's go? Or would you have been like, no, you're the crazy one, I know what's going on? Is a person in that state willing and able to go get help?
Funny that you would ask that question, because when I was in a state of full-blown mania and people were beginning to say, hey, Martin's crazy, he's lost his mind, I decided I'm going to prove them wrong. And this was before I got fired. I said, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to go in on my own and see the psychiatrist. I'm going to get a clean bill of health. That'll shut them up and they'll see that there's nothing wrong. And so I did. I went in on my own. And sure enough, they said, there's nothing wrong with you. You're perfectly fine. And I said, see, there's nothing wrong with me. They're making it up. Later, what happened when I was in depression, though, was a different sort of thing. I really realized that there's something wrong with my brain. I am mentally, there's something sick in my brain. And I went in on my own without anybody saying anything and went in and got help, and they diagnosed me. And I was happy about it, because without a diagnosis, you're flailing. You're like a ship at sea without a rudder. You're just flailing back and forth. But once I got a diagnosis and I knew that I have bipolar disorder with psychosis, I had a face on the target. I had something that I could wrap my arms around. I could study about it, read about it, be informed, start taking steps to, you know, recover. And so I was really grateful that I had a diagnosis.
You are a retired 2-star general. You know, I'm so humbled to have a guy like you on the show and to get to interact with a guy like you. You know, you're retired. Why be so candid about this? You know, I feel like men, you know, the listeners here are men, athletic-minded men, and we kind of, you know, there's a lot of machismo, and mental illness is not fully understood and can be mistaken for mental weakness. Why be so candid about this?
Well, I think it's part of the military ethos. I went through a horrendous experience that nearly killed me and destroyed everything that I valued. And I said, if I don't say anything, if I don't tell my story, it'll die with me and nobody will get the benefit of this, you know, life-altering experience. So I said, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to speak about it. I'm going to talk all about it. And so I did. And the real reason is I want to help people by helping to stop the stigma, which is based on fear and ignorance. You know, this idea that mental illness is the person's fault, that it's because they're weak or they lack character. I mean, that's completely untrue. I mean, it is now beyond scientific refute that it is physically and biologically real inside the brain, the same way diabetes, heart disease, cancer are physically real. So I said, I want to help stop the stigma, which is the biggest barrier to people going in and getting help. I want to share my lessons, how I recovered from this brutal disease, and help other people recover. And then lastly, save lives, because a lot of people die from bipolar disorder, either suicide, heart attacks, strokes, death by cop, death by driving their automobile 100 miles an hour into a bridge abutment. And so there's a lot of death that goes with this. And the lessons and everything apply not only to bipolar disorder, which is, you know, my disease, but to all other mental illness as well, you know, severe depression and so on and so forth. So that's basically it, to help people. That's why I tell the story.
So you still have bipolar disorder. This isn't, I don't think, something that you get cured from, like you can get cured from a typical disease. How do you maintain your mental health now? Do you have routines and habits that you do that help you?
Yes. So once you have bipolar disorder, you always have it. So, I mean, it's cradle to grave. And it's possible you never have the onset the way I had in Iraq. And so you could continue along on the spectrum without having a crisis type of incident or series of incidents. So here's how I maintain it. And you have to manage it every day of your life. First off, medication. And the medication is critical because it gives you balanced brain chemistry. So for me, I take three different medications, the most prominent of which is lithium. And lithium provides a ceiling to keep your mania from going through a ceiling, and then a floor to keep the depression from falling too far. So medication is number one. I take them every single day. I'm afraid not to take them because I know my brain will go out of control and I'll end up where I was before, if not worse. Second is therapy. Talking to a therapist on a regular basis is really good for your mind, helping to solve problems, understanding your triggers, understanding your agitation, your anger, how to prevent it, how to control it. Third is healthful living. Healthy diet, plenty of exercise, plenty of sleep, plenty of water, low stress. And those three elements are necessary but not sufficient to have a recovery that's built to last. It needs to be anchored into what I call the five P's. And the five P's are, first, purpose. You have to have a purpose that makes you want to get up and go and do what you love to do. And for me, my purpose is sharing my bipolar story to help stop the stigma, promote recovery, and save lives. That drives me. I mean, I speak, I write, I confer on this every single day. And so, I mean, I wrote a book that just came out, have published about 20 articles, have given about 100 talks and podcasts and interviews. So that's the purpose. That's P number one. Second P is people. It's super important to surround yourself with a network of people who are happy, energetic, and fun, that lift your spirits. The third P is place. Living in a place where you can do the things you want to do and be with the people you want. So, I mean, for example, if you love powder skiing, go live in Utah or Colorado. I moved to Florida for the sunshine, the warmth, the brightness, which is really good for my brain. The fourth P is perseverance. And, you know, that applies to everybody. But when you're trying to overcome a mental illness, it's extremely difficult. And there's setbacks and, you know, you go one step forward, two steps back. So you have to have the will to win, to keep on fighting, to never quit, to never give up, and just keep moving forward. And then the last P, the fifth P, is presence. And presence has to do with thinking. It's the ability to objectively get outside of one's own mind and think clearly and objectively about your own thinking. And the reason that's so important is that a lot of times what's going on in our own brains is wrong. We think wrong things. We have delusionary thinking. And so doing that objective thinking, it's called metacognition. Doing that and talking to a therapist about it can be extremely helpful to a person's quality of life. So that's kind of my strategy for healthy living.
Metacognition. I love that. That's hard to do. You do that with a therapist. You gain that perspective with a therapist. Are there other ways to do it? Journaling, other habits, routines to help you with perspective? Because I think that's important for all of us. I mean, that's really, if we can all step outside of ourselves, that's what we do through my coaching practice, is help people get outside of themselves. You know, we use the analogy of people are on the inside of the jar trying to read the label. You need somebody on the outside of the jar reading the label to you, or finding a way to get yourself outside of the jar. Any other ways that have been helpful for doing that?
So for me, yoga is a practice that I found very, very helpful. Meditation, and then some of the basics of mindfulness, which in all of those things require real discipline to slow down and to move at a much more measured pace, which for me, and probably for you in your athletes that you work with, is really hard because we're used to going 100 miles an hour, you know, putting it all on the line. And so this idea of backing off the throttle and dialing back the needle is very, very counterintuitive and difficult to do. I find it very hard to do those things.
Likewise. Very hard, but very necessary. Often the things that help us the most are not some things that all always come naturally. So, Greg, what an incredible story you have. Very grateful to have you share it here. Where can people buy your book, find you, follow you, learn more about you, etc.?
Okay, so the book is really, this is a treasure trove of information, you know, not only on my story, but all about mental illness, dealing with it, recovering from it, the role of family and friends, etc. You can buy that anywhere books are sold. Amazon seems to be the easiest. And then second is my website is really very good. It's www.bipolargeneral.com. And when you click on the landing page is the book. So you can just order the book right there. I'd just like to point out there's some other very, very good sources of help out there. One of them is a company called, it's at grithope.com, GRITHOPE.com. And it's a company that specializes in mental health and resiliency. They've been around for about 20 years. They work with the Department of Defense, first responders, veterans, universities, etc. There's a new technology that a person I know has developed that is a special keyboard on your iPhone that can measure mood changes up and down and give an early indicators of bipolar disorder and then help you get into the system quicker to deal with it. And that's called BiAffect, capital B-I, capital A-F-F-E-C-T, BiAffect.com. And that's out of the University of Illinois nonprofit. There's another book that I recommend. A friend of mine wrote it. It's called Brainstorm. And it's really good. She has bipolar disorder. And out of her book, we're actually making a documentary film about bipolar disorder. It's called Brainstorm the Film, one word, brainstormthefilm.com. It'll be on Public Broadcasting System, PBS, next year. And so those are a few resources to take a look at.
Excellent. For the listener, as always, we'll have all those links in the action plan. Greg, honor to have you. Thank you so much for sharing your message.
Totally my honor. It was a privilege. I loved it. And you did a fantastic job interviewing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.